here on the high wire, we have been dancing around this. We've listened to both sides. I've been free to talk to scientists that say they believe it's natural, but every time we talk to a scientist that says it's man-made, we lose a YouTube channel or we lose a Facebook channel. And frankly, I don't care anymore because most of those channels are all gone. From here on out, the high wire is changing course. We are no longer going to vacillate between whether or not this is natural or man-made. My assumption now, in the work that we've done, in the science that we've seen and shown you throughout this year, and much of the science I cannot show you that is being privately handed to us anonymously from world-renowned scientists, I am now under the belief that this is a man-made virus. Now, sure, we could be wrong, and that's how science works. But I'm tired of wasting any more energy because I think we have more important things to focus on. And now we've got to start talking about a world where a man-made virus is being circulated. And to help me understand that and help get into the details of this in this beginning new journey into where is this going to take us, I had an opportunity to be in an interview with a really great doctor that laid out so much of the science that I've been looking at and looking for someone that could help me explain it. This interview took place last week, and I said, Dr. Fleming, would you join me on the high wire? And so it is my honor and pleasure to invite Dr. Fleming onto the high wire right now. Dr. Fleming, thank you for taking the time. Obviously, we're changing our structure of the show just because I know you're squeezing this time in. But to begin with, just give me a sense of your background and sort of what gets you into this conversation.
Well, I'm originally a physicist, a nuclear cardiologist who ended up getting a law degree somewhere along the way. And I joined American Heart really at an early age in the mid-70s and was on several committees that included heart disease and what caused it. And by 1994, I had revised the theory of what causes heart disease because it's an inflammatory process and included things like bacteria and viruses that help explain why people end up with heart disease and cancer and diabetes and a variety of other problems. And then I spent approximately two decades developing a method to measure changes in tissue without going inside the body and being able to determine if something is causing this inflammation and blood clotting and to see if things are treating effectively. And then, of course, like the rest of you, in 2019, my life changed. I thought I was going down one research pathway, and this changed it. So the SARS-CoV-2 actually confirmed the original theory that I presented in 94, along with the work since then. And then the patent made it possible to actually turn around and measure treatments that we did outside of the United States to really look at this virus and distinguish the virus SARS-CoV-2 from the inflammation and blood clotting or inflammothrombotic disease called COVID-19. And that's how I ended up here. The more I looked into what was going on with this virus and investigated the research, the more I uncovered the origins of this virus. And like you and so many other people, I think probably even Dr. Rand Paul, have unfortunately come to the conclusion that the evidence all shows that this is a man-made virus. And for Dr. Fauci to sit at a hearing with Rand Paul and perjure himself is unconscionable because we have, I've shared with you, even the patent, the international patent that Ralph Barrett got for gain of function research on the spike protein that's paid for, that's it, by NIH. And so despite the fact that we have all this research and all the papers where Barrick and Shang Li and Peter Daszak admit to working together and they got money from the Department of Defense and from National Institutes of Health, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and multiple government agencies, and the DOD even provided Peter Franz as an advisor for Daszak at EcoHealth to help them figure out what to do with this virus. Despite all of that evidence, there's nothing better than just simply looking at the patent that says we are modifying a spike protein and the NIH is getting funds from it because right, that research helped pay for it.
It's amazing. Let's go just, I mean, we have a couple of videos, but let me just jump into some of the articles that you're, this paper trail that Fauci seems to be saying doesn't exist. Let's just look at a couple of these articles. All right, here is the NIH National Library of Medicine. Angiotensin-converting enzyme 2, ACE2, proteins of different bat species confer variable susceptibility to SARS-CoV entry. There's that Zheng Li, as we're talking about. All right, lab-made coronavirus triggers debate. The creation of a chimeric SARS-like virus has scientists discussing the risk of gain-of-function research. Barrick to lead 10 million NIH grant, Epidemiology News Recognition Awards Research News. And then a SARS-like cluster of circulating bat coronaviruses in Nature shows potential for human emergence. Again, Zheng Li and Ralph S. Barrick. So, you know, China and America coming together. Research in this manuscript was supported by grants. Look at this. Grants from who? The National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. We're not even talking the mothership NIH. We're talking NIAID, exactly where Fauci is in charge, and the National Institute of Aging. Funding from Eco Health Alliance. So we see this connection between the two. So,
Go back to that last slide you had.
Okay.
Go back to that last slide.
Right there.
You see that USAID EBT predict?
USAID.
That is at the very bottom, just to the left of funding from EcoHealth.
Yes, USAID.
Do you know who
EBT
that is?
Predict. No, who is that?
That is the NIH and the CIA. That's what that agency connection is.
Wow. All right, you have some videos, and I think to sort of make this make sense, there's obviously a lot of letters and words and numbers there. We have one more still. All right, let's read this next still. I'm just putting this all together. This is from the Journal of Virology. Isolation and characterization of a novel bat coronavirus closely related to the direct progenitor of severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus. Peter Daszak, Zheng Li Shi. So there's these three players we keep hearing from. Here's what it says. We recently isolated a bat SL-CoV strain and constructed an infectious clone of another strain. Significantly, these strains are closely related to SARS-CoV and capable of using the same cellular receptor, angiotensin-converting enzyme 2, ACE2, as SARS-CoV. I mean, if that's not a smoking gun, here it is. Who funded it? Health and Human Services, the National Institute of Health, NIH, providing funding to Peter Daszak and Zheng Li Shi under grant number NIAID R01A110964. And here it is. You can see the grant, the contract between the Department of Health and Human Services and Eco Health Alliance. Understand the risk of bat coronavirus emergence. And then here is the list of the payments to Wuhan that were made that were just brought up by Dr. Rand Paul. There it is. I mean, it's as plain as day. We have a head of our health department lying in front of cameras, lying, you know, in front of our Senate right now, lying to the world, and yet he still holds his job. But I want to get into this Daszak guy. You had a great video on your website where you talked about it. Let's play that, and you can explain to us what we're hearing here.
You're saying these are diverse coronaviruses, and you can't vaccinate against them. There are no antivirals. What do we do?
Well, so I think that coronaviruses are pretty good. I mean, you're a virologist, you know all this stuff, but you can manipulate them in the lab pretty easily. It's just spike protein drives a lot of what happens with the coronavirus, zoonotic risk. So you can get the sequence, you can build the protein, and we work with Ralph Barrick at UNC to do this, insert it into a backbone of another virus and do some work in the labs.
All right, tell me about that video.
Right. So that is a virologist talking to Peter Daszak, who, you know, this is a classic example of if you just let someone keep talking, they will hang themselves. This is Daszak, who feels so confident and I think boldly just expressing himself that, you know, he's worked with Ralph Barrick. And the interesting thing about that, you showed the papers and they mentioned it, the spike protein of one and the back protein of another. But if you actually read the research and you go to the supplemental parts of it, they did more than that. They changed 5 nucleotides in addition to taking the spike protein of one virus and the backbone of another. And those 5, the 5th one had to do with the envelope. And we know that the envelope has a great deal to do with this virus being able to infect the brain of people in addition to the spike protein. They intentionally changed it. They published what they changed. And so, you know, we've got that. We've got that evidence. And for them to say that they're not playing around with this just misses the information. In fact, the first notation of a chimer or a gain of function for SARS-CoV-2 dates back to 2006.
Wow.
When a Chinese lab combined hepatitis C virus, HIV-1, SARS-CoV-1, and SARS-CoV-2. I found the research on it. This is an example that the more you dig and the more data you find, the more you realize these people have been doing this with the express purpose of re-engineering and seeing what they could do. And Daszak's papers and Barrick's papers and Shang Li's papers repeatedly point out that they are making well-known infectious pathogenic agents, and they're delighted with the fact. In fact, in 2015, they came out and they announced that they could produce a more virulent pathogenic virus that would produce a pandemic, and yet they were still allowed to move forward on that. And during all that time, the efforts to block the research by scientists who were concerned about gain of function because of labs like the University of Wisconsin and the Netherlands that sent out infectious agents that the receiving lab had no idea what they were getting, gave an example about how easy it is for all of this to get out. This is dangerous research.
Yeah.
You have to think about the fact that the Department of Defense, with their advisor, gave Daszak $39 million, more than half of the monies that I know that he's received. And the DOD doesn't work with the Girl Scouts.
Right. You know, and what's amazing about this, and as Rand Paul points out, you know, he's still being careful, right? It may be natural, but it may be out of one of these labs. But the idea that in these labs are things that are as infectious as this coronavirus pandemic, what's caused this, and 10, 15, God knows how many times more infectious and deadly are in these labs, and why is it we're all hiding from having the most important conversation there is? These people, and as you know, there have been so many stories of leaks at the Wuhan lab, leaks at North Carolina, where these places are taking place. It's one of the reasons we said we've got to make this illegal. This is playing with something even more dangerous than nuclear energy. You know, we get so obsessed with nuclear weapons plants and who's going to build a nuclear weapon, and we are letting these labs build viruses that could take us out. You have a really incredible video where we see Dr. Ralph Barrick, or I don't know if he's a doctor, but Ralph Barrick bragging about his talent to do this. Let's take a look at this.
Mm-hmm. Avete dato al virus una marcia in più? Lo avete potenziato?
The only gain of function that occurred in that virus is that we changed its antigenicity. And what that data tells you is that any vaccine or antibody that you'd made against the original virus from 2003 wasn't going to protect the public against this new virus if it should emerge in the future.
Se guardassimo il genoma della vostra chimera, capiremmo che era stata fatta in laboratorio?
Anything that we build in the laboratory has what are called signature mutations. It's like a little, it's where you signed your name, almost. It says, you put in these mutations and it says, this was built from material in the Barrick laboratory.
Ma se non vuoi lasciare questa firma, puoi costruire in laboratorio un virus indistinguibile da un naturale, giusto?
It is correct. You can do it without leaving a signature, yes. We're using any of the three or four different approaches for coronaviruses that were developed by different researchers. You can leave no trace that it was made in a laboratory.
I mean, there is so much to that video that is chilling, starting with the fact that what we built in our lab, if it was ever out, there's no vaccine prior to 2013 or whatever he's talking about this. There was no time that no vaccine would be able to cover or handle what we just created. Basically, we have now outpaced any protection that exists.
Right. Well, notice the first thing he says. The only gain of function that changed was the antigenicity. That is gain of function.
Right.
That's the change in the structure. The antigen is the presentation of the protein to our body to respond to. The antigen is the spike protein.
Right.
So he says we change the spike protein. That is gain of function. That's what we're talking about. Secondly, notice how he plays with his hands. I mean, this is a man who, despite feeling that he's confident that he's in charge, is wondering just whether he's going to get caught because he's done something wrong. And then notice that he admits that you don't need to leave evidence that you've actually manipulated this virus. And finally, look at this, that this interviewer's response to what he's saying. I mean, if you read the expressions on her face, you can see the sheer horror in her mind as she's recognizing what this man is telling her.
It really is outrageous, right? Oh, we put a little signature, and then it doesn't take much work to take a next step, but you don't need to put the signature, right? Well,
exactly.
Yeah, you got me. We absolutely could do this without putting the signature and make it look like it's natural, which is exactly what Rand Paul was saying to Tony Fauci. They have a way of erasing the signature so it would appear natural, and Fauci just says, no, we're not doing that.
And I've had virology students working on their PhD criticize some comments that I've made in the past because they said, why would anybody do that? If you didn't want somebody to know, you just wouldn't keep records of it. Really,
right.
You think? Because that's kind of what they're doing, is not keeping records of it. You know, everything here says guilt. You know, Anthony Fauci committed perjury.
Right, for a reason. Let's remember, for a reason. He's not just up there making a mistake. He is deciding that my best path forward is to perjure myself and basically go with the denial defense, which we see basically from every mob boss that's ever been on trial.
Absolutely. And do you remember what Anthony Fauci said about international travel in the spring of 2020 when a decision was being made about whether we needed to shut down international travel? He said no, right?
Yep.
Now, he's in charge of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease. In 2007, the National Science Foundation conducted a study paid for by U.S. taxpayers with Indiana University, Italian researchers, and I believe French researchers. And the purpose of that study was to say, if we have a pandemic, what do you do? And the conclusion of that 2007 study was you immediately shut down international travel. So the head of the NIAID, who would have to be aware of this study paid for by U.S. taxpayer dollars, either didn't read it, which doesn't speak well, didn't understand it, which doesn't speak well, or knew about it and decided not to implement it, which doesn't speak well. You and your viewers choose which one of the three, but none of them speak well.
Right. So here's a question. Obviously, I don't know where you're at in science. The way I do the high wire, this is the first time you and I have ever really talked other than the interview we did the other day. I don't know what your answers are going to be. But there's been a real conversation about, you know, they never isolated this virus. This virus doesn't exist. There's that whole terrain theory thing. I'm not really going to get your opinion on that. But what I found shocking was how quickly they did know this spike protein. Now, my question is, were they isolating the whole virus? Because they clearly know the spike protein, which makes me think, why did they know it? And like within days, we know exactly how to make a vaccine. We know the exact genetic code. Sounds like somebody might have actually built that thing. But what is your thought on, have we isolated this virus and the difference between the virus and the spike protein?
Right. So the virus has been identified. And it's not done the way that people out there are trying to get it to be done by Cook's postulates, although I would argue that we've legitimately satisfied those.
Okay.
We don't, in 2021 or even in 2004, and I'm using that date for a reason, the Human Genome Project was completed. We don't take genetic material out of anything and just line it up. It doesn't come out that way. So you put it together like puzzle pieces. You have enough matching parts that overlap, and you keep doing that. And when you're done, you have the entire genetic code because DNA and RNA is very fragile. So you look at the pieces, you put them together, and then when you're done, you've got the full story. So that's really what they've done. The spike protein has a very specific component of the mRNA, and it by itself, and one of the things that I've cautioned is that just having the mRNA for the spike protein in a vaccine is not going to be enough to sufficiently make that amount of antigen, spike protein, for you to get an immune response. And I argued back in March that there has to be something more in it. And if you look at the data for the last 2 to 3 decades, there's something called self-amplifying mRNAs, which is how they do that. They take the target, in this case, the spike protein genetic information, and they take the earlier part of the genetic sequence that codes for what's called a replicase, or repeating enzyme, and those go together in the actual vaccines to get it to replicate more and more the spike protein. So you've got we put the things, the genetic code together piece by piece. They know what the spike protein code is. That's how we know there's PRRA inserts in there that don't exist in any of the coronavirus. That's how we know there's HIV glycoprotein 120 in it that's not in any other coronavirus. And that's how we know that the change of the structure in the molecular spike protein produced a regional, a prion-like domain near the top of it where it attaches to the ACE receptor called the regional binding domain. But also remember to that little piece of information I just gave you that I ran across a couple of days ago, which is SARS-CoV-2 was being worked on in 2006. So it is not like this is brand new. It's brand new to you and me.
Right.
We got exposed to it in 2019, but they were combining it with SARS-CoV-1 and HIV and hepatitis C virus back in 2006. And that was the Chinese that were doing that. So why in God's green earth we would fund a group of people that are already playing around with this and give them more money to do it? I mean, to be honest, neither side is their hands are clean.
Right.
There's blood to be shed on both sides of this.
And it feels like Fauci's trying to say that's not our exact thing that we designed with them. I mean, is that what he's saying? It may not be exactly, but we were involved in this process, and whether they went one step further or went, I mean, who knows? Is that really the argument? This image you've just shown me is something that I don't think many of us see. We keep hearing about the spike protein. And so you are defining this then, as I'm saying, and I want to remind everybody that this is your theory. This is your information. There are those that would disagree with it. This is how science works. But you are presenting this information. I want you to explain how you've come about this. But this is the image you believe of the spike protein. Take us through it a little bit. What are we looking at here exactly?
Right. So let me point out that on FlemingMethod.com, if you go to the end of that under the last tab, you will find documentation and went to more and then documentation. And on that page, you will find over 60 published papers.
Okay.
So what I'm telling you is not my opinion. It is the result of research, scientific research that has been done and published on every one of these components. That's how much, and that's not all the data I have, but that is, you go look at it. This is what I call the heuristic method. Don't take my word for it.
Amen.
I don't want you to take my word for it. I want you to question everything I say, but I want you to question everything everybody else says. Everybody watching this program is intelligent enough to go to that site, download those papers, read those papers, and say, you know, the earth really does go around the sun. The sun doesn't go around the earth,
right?
You know?
Yep.
So back to that image.
Okay, let's take a look at this image. And what are we looking at? So, folks, this is
right.
The famous spike protein.
Right. So on the very bottom, you see the outer envelope of the virus. And then the tree-like structure is what the molecule that we call the spike protein, which really has two parts, an S1 and an S2, is at. And if you see where it bends, when you look at this virus in real time, this virus actually bends at that joint. It bends and hunts and moves around to find the ACE receptor. Now, number one is identified as HIV pseudovirus glycoprotein 120, which Shi Zhang Li has admitted to inserting into this spike protein to increase the infectivity. Her documented papers are on that website, not
mine. Let's just talk about that for a second. I want to stay. Let's stay focused here, because I remember very early on, and maybe they don't connect. There was some Indian scientists that said of this spike protein, we have found an HIV insert. They like disappeared. That paper was shut down. That whole story was so incredibly whitewashed immediately. Is that, were they on to something? Were they correct? Is this what they were talking about?
Yeah, I think this is probably the exact same thing, because it's like, this is what Xi Zhang Li said she did. They modified it with the express purpose of making it more infective. And it does, because that glycoprotein 120 is critical. The reason why that's critical is because it is related to the PRRA insert. And those two things together allow this virus to increase its ability to infect by somewhere between 4 to 20 times. Now, guess who owns the patent for the protease components for the PRRA insert?
Enlighten me.
The U.S. government owns that patent.
Amazing. All right. So that's the HIV insert. Let's go back and take me through the rest of this spike protein.
Right. So then the second part is what's called a PRRA insert. And every amino acid has a letter of the alphabet assigned to it. It's one of the shortcut codes that scientists have when they're talking about amino acids. So P is for proline, R is for arginine, and A is for alanine. And so it's a PRRA insert. And the important thing here is that every one of those amino acids requires 3 nucleotide bases to make.
Okay.
Mutations.
What does that mean?
Mutations occur 1 nucleotide at a time. So those 4 amino acids mean 12 nucleotides were inserted. They didn't mutate 12 at a time. Mutations don't happen like that. Okay. 1 makes a major change. This is 12 inserted in. And if you look at every other coronavirus on the planet, no other coronavirus has this. Rabies toxin does, and rabies toxin is also related to the PRRA insert, just like glycoprotein 120, that the federal government owns these patents
on. So is this when I've been talking to world-renowned stem cell scientists, like real microbiologists, they've all said the same thing. Say, look, we track viruses really well all over the world. There's nothing that surprises us, especially coronaviruses and flu viruses. We're all over that. And that there is this huge jump. It's not one. Is this what they're talking about? It's not one little piece of gain of function. It makes multiple steps that never happens in nature. We can track each step. And all of a sudden, is this what you're talking about? 12 nucleotides? It's just impossible that we wouldn't have witnessed an evolutional process to get us there?
You would have to see something that walks you step by step through the sequence. You don't get 12 at a time. That's an insert. That's a human phenomenon.
Okay. All right,
nature doesn't do that.
Okay, let's go back and get this third fairly horrifying and terrible piece.
Well, the reality is that this is a molecule, and so, you know, it's like a box. If you put pressure on a box, it changes the shape of a box or a bag or a balloon. Well, this is a molecule, and if you put pressure on it by doing something to it, it changes its shape. Well, there's been 2 pressure points. One is the HIV glycoprotein 120 insert. The other one is the PRRA 4 amino acid insert, which is 12 nucleotides, as we talked about.
Yep.
And that has caused a conformation or shape change of this molecule. And it's occurred right at the top of it. We're number 3, and that's a prion-like domain. And what that means is that area has the potential to cause prion diseases, because prions are abnormally folded proteins.
Okay.
And I wish I could tell you that was just a potential risk, but there's been 2 major animal models that have been done, not by the vaccine companies, mind you, but by other researchers, and they're published on the site. One is on what's called humanized mice, so mice that have been modified to have an ACE receptor so we can use them as a study model. And they were exposed to this virus with its spike protein. 95% of those mice died within 2 weeks. When the autopsies were done and the brains were looked at, the brains looked like sponges. They had these open spaces. And so in medicine and science, we call that spongiform encephalopathy because it's the brain. The brain looks like a sponge. What that produces is what is generally known as mad cow disease. Mm-hmm. So every one of these mice develop mad cow disease. They've done this in another animal model, rhesus macaques, which are a very close primate to us. So if you want to know what's going to happen to humans, this is a good way to do it. You expose these monkeys to the drug or the virus or whatever you're testing, and you look to see what the response is. And they sacrificed these animals at 5 to 6 weeks, and they did biopsies of their brain. And in their brain, they found inflammation, glial cells, and other types of inflammatory cells. And they found something called Lewy bodies in the brains of these animals, where Lewy bodies is a prion disease that produces Alzheimer's. So we have two animal models, two very different but good animal models, that have shown that when the animal's brains are exposed to this spike protein, which, by the way, we know is exquisitely designed to cross the blood-brain barrier, your final frontier protection of your brain, is easily crossed by these, not only these spike proteins, but the lipid nanoparticles that are used for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine are very susceptible to being crossed by these lipid nanoparticles. So we've seen in two different animal models, prion diseases that are mad cow disease or Alzheimer's, that we're yet on the beginning of this. For example, the animal model at 2 weeks for the mice represents 1.5 years for humans.
Okay. And so just to be clear, how much time do I have? Because I know that you're on a deadline. I want to make sure that I get everything.
We're good. Let's go. Okay. I've got till 2:15 at
okay,
the
very
at
good.
The
so we probably yeah. won't go there. I'll get you out of here. All right, great. So
perfect.
Let me understand this. So this spike protein, is this what we're talking about, was injected, or just the prion? But the actual spike protein went into the mice, and this was the result that we saw, this spongiform of the brain. Okay. Now, to be clear, and this is something that, you know, with my audience, we're going to start getting into a little bit of a scary place. We're going to talk about the vaccine in a minute. But right now, we are talking about this natural virus, this spike protein that is flowing through the air, floating on a coronavirus that we're calling SARS-CoV-2, that has this prion. And what's ironic to me, I mean, isn't that really when we hear about, it's like the crown, like the spike, the protein, the corona? Is the crown actually this prion? And, you know, here's my question. What is a prion? I know there's a virus. I know there's a bacteria. Right. And then this is sort of a new, just fairly new discovery. Is it not a prion?
No. Well, prions we've known about for a number of decades. And so the spike protein, it's all the spike proteins attached to the virus that form the crown, the corona. Okay. But prions we've known about for some time. The reality is we really don't have good treatments on them, and they are the ideal bioweapon. But my perspective on this is I don't think, engineered that into that. I think that was a consequence of them playing around with the glycoprotein 120 and the PRA, and unfortunately the consequence was this prion-like domain.
Okay. And so when we talk about a prion, this is something that causes your cells to fold on each other, or
right. It causes proteins to abnormally fold. So if you have a normal appearing protein, it functions, but abnormally folded proteins can't work, and they just curl up and they become dysfunctional and damaging, and then they touch other proteins. And what a real prion disease does is when that abnormally folded protein comes into contact with normal proteins, it can cause them to abnormally fold, and you get this slowly progressive disease like Alzheimer's and mad cow's disease. Now, before your viewers get too stressed out, I want you to know that on the 5th of June, I'm going to be giving a presentation here in Dallas. It's going to be a 3.5-hour presentation to 4 hours, and in that, I'm also going to share with people, based upon the best medical evidence science, what we know about preventing the infection, what we know about treating the infection, what we know about treating COVID, and what we know about treating the vaccines and the damage that they can do. Because there is good medical science that backs up a treatment regimens for all four of those. Before anybody gets too stressed out, be aware that that science exists and is coming forward, and we're going to share that with people.
All right, great. So now let's talk about, are you anti-vaccine by nature or by statement?
No, I'm an MD. I'm an allopath.
Okay.
I am not. I saw the segment you aired from Steve Bannon. It's exactly right. I am not anti-vaccine. I'm just anti-stupid, dumb, poor medicine. I'm anti not doing science right. This is my 53rd year of doing research, and we have never done anything this sloppily that I can recall on a major project. I mean, we've done some sloppy work. I mean, all you have to do is go back into the 70s and see how rapidly we rushed out swine flu vaccines. And I was an orderly in hospitals in those days, and I took care of people with the nerve damage, the Guillain-Barré syndrome, yeah, and people who couldn't breathe. I know what this nightmare looks like. I was in medical school when HIV came out. I know what these nightmares look like. I didn't need to revisit them in 2021.
Right. Okay. Do you think that in some ways this is obviously man-made? The question then becomes just whether it's escape or on purpose. But essentially, this is a bioweapon then. I mean, could we call it that? I mean, this is something that is, let me bring out the definition. Do we have the definition of a bioweapon really quickly? I think this is from the United Nations. Biological weapons disseminate disease-causing organisms or toxins to harm or kill humans, animals, or plants. They generally consist of two parts, a weaponized agent and a delivery mechanism. In addition to strategic or tactical military applications, biological weapons can be used for political assassinations, the infection of livestock or agricultural produce to cause food shortages and economic loss, the creation of environmental catastrophes, and the introduction of widespread illness, fear and mistrust among the public. That ending is quite chilling. That's from the United Nations. Do you think this fits into that category?
This virus is a man-made gain-of-function virus paid for by U.S. taxpayers' dollars, including monies that came from the Department of Defense. This is a bioweapon. By every definition, and by every definition, their having developed this is a violation of the Biological Weapons Convention Treaty. Dr. Mengele right now is rolling over in his grave, thinking, wondering why he could not have the capacity to do this type of human manipulation. And right now, this vaccine rollout is the largest research project conducted in the history of mankind. You are either part of the experimental group or part of the control group. For anybody to be forcing or coercing anybody to take this vaccine, when if you look at the numbers on these vaccines, they do not statistically reduce your risk of coming down with a diagnosis of COVID or killing you. When you go through the EUA documents, you will find that those are the people who do not get diagnosed, and there is no statistically significant difference for the people who got the Pfizer vaccine versus people who didn't get vaccinated at 7 days, for the people who got the Moderna vaccine and who didn't at 14 days, and for the Janssen group at 14 days, there was a slight difference, but by 28 days, that difference was gone, and there's no difference in deaths. And in fact, the Janssen data is based upon the incorrect data if you read through the EUA, because if you go to the following table, you will find out that the numbers that they use to get approval are not the centrally confirmed lab numbers. They use the peripheral labs. But those numbers were not confirmed by the central core lab, which is what you do when you have a research project. A central place that says yes, no. The central core numbers don't even show benefit at 14 days. This is a biological weapon, and they have not only
just to be clear with everybody, you know, and we're going to get into some of the details of this later with Jeffrey Jackson, The entire thing we think a vaccine does is it stops your ability to be infected and therefore stops transmission, which given you've got this bioweapon that's either been leaked or on purpose is floating around, it would be nice to have a product that makes sure that you don't get infected by it. But none of these vaccines have proven to be capable of doing that. We have reported on that. We have reported on the misuse of the numbers around the Johnson & Johnson and the corrections that have been made. But let's then get into this vaccine then and how they work, because now you have these questions. The whole virus is floating around. I could contract it. But we have a vaccine program that is now going to, as far as I understand, take this essentially, to me, let me just clarify. Really, the spike protein could be considered the bioweapon separately apart from the coronavirus that's riding on. I mean, is that clear that really we could look at the coronavirus as a floating delivery system for this weaponized bioweapon? Is that a
that's
clear way
actually
to look
an
at
excellent
it?
That's an excellent way of looking at it.
Okay.
Yes.
And so now we've made vaccines where normally and we've done a lot of our investigation in vaccines, you will find that we go for the weaker part of the virus. Like if you think of like there's a tank with a nuclear weapon on top of it, we try to just take out the tracks. We like create antibodies to the tracks, let's knock out the wheels so that the virus cannot spread throughout your body. But if there's an accident, we've put the weakest part to develop antibodies around. What is so weird about this vaccine, I don't know if we couldn't call it a vaccine, but instead of going after the weakest part of it, we seem to have taken the nuclear missile sitting on top and said, let's inject that into everybody, the actual bioweapon. Am I missing something? Tell me about how these vaccines are made.
No, you've got it exactly right. In fact, one of the things that people need to know is that just because you can make antibodies doesn't mean that's a good thing. We treat you for strep throat with antibiotics, partially to kill the bacteria, but partially because the antibodies to strep throat, Streptococcus pneumoniae, will also attack your heart because it looks similar enough. And we don't want you developing rheumatic heart disease. So cardiologists like myself and internists and other doctors give you antibiotics so you don't develop antibodies. For the spike protein, we have seen a brand new phenomenon with this spike protein we've never seen before. There's something called antibody-dependent enhancement.
Right.
And in the past, it's meant different things. But for this spike protein, it means something completely different. The spike protein, I think I told you there were two parts, S1 and S2, that come together. On part of the spike protein, there's something called the N-terminal domain. And we know from people that were hospitalized with COVID that many of those people who did not do well had antibodies to the spike protein. But part of those antibodies were to the N-terminal domain. Now, there was a paper, and it's on the site, published by researchers from Osaka, Japan, who showed that when antibodies were made to the N-terminal domain of this spike protein, it actually opened up like a flower, this spike protein, so it was even more infective. And one of the reasons why people did not do well in hospital was because they made antibodies to the N-terminal domain. Well, that N-terminal domain is still in this vaccine. These vaccines are either the mRNA, the genetic code that you find in the virus, like Pfizer and Moderna, or double-stranded DNA put inside of another virus, the adenovirus, for the Janssen or Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And it carries billions of coded messages to make spike proteins. So people are being inundated with this spike protein. The people that did poorly up front with the infection were all the people that had comorbidities, all the people that I talked about in 94 and 95 and 99 and all that time when I presented those programs and published in the textbook, in cardiology textbook. All of those people do poorly because their body is already geared up. They have inflammation and blood clotting already going on.
Right.
So for them, you drop this little match on it, and that was enough to kill them because nobody was treating the inflammation and the blood clotting. Now we have people getting billions of this by these vaccines, and people that are healthy are doing what healthy people should do. They're going, wow, this is a massive antigen load, and I need to make antibodies to it and make T-cell responses. And they are having reactions. And if VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, is anywhere close to history, it's getting between 1 and 10% of the reported adverse events. In fact, I've had lots of patients tell me they have tried to report and their doctors say, oh, you're just overreacting. It's not the vaccine.
I can take a step further for you. I'm talking to doctors that are saying, I keep trying to put in the VAERS reports and they're bouncing them back to me. They're not accepting them. There is clearly a cover-up going on in VAERS, and even under those circumstances, and we've covered this over the last few days, if it's 1%, that means we may be in the neighborhood of 400,000 deaths already. If it's 10%, 40,000, either way, these are astronomical numbers that outpace any vaccine rollout we have ever seen. You know, just to sort of sum it up here, because you're saying something, you know, and so we've reported on this. We know that based on the CDC's numbers, they said 96% of the deaths that happened, at least in the original, you know, first year phase of this, 96% of the people had at least 2.5 comorbidities. Meaning, you know, we knew they were over the age of 65. They didn't just have heart disease. Also, they probably had diabetes or cancer or COPD. You had to have, you had to essentially be on your deathbed for coming in contact with this bioweapon virus as we're describing it. But still, that's all it affected. The youth were doing fine. They didn't seem to have any receptors for this virus whatsoever. Healthy middle-aged people still in the 99.9 something survival range. But here's my question, because, you know, and we're gonna do this more in the future. There's so many more questions, but I appreciate you taking the time. My concern, because we have, there was a study that we looked at with prion disease around this virus, and I said, my God, if I go to my audience with prion disease floating in this virus, you know, what is the solution? How do we get around it? I don't know if you're, I think you're aware of this by Klassen. Does it fit your understanding of the prion, or is he looking at something different there? Just very quickly.
No, I think he's spot on. He's done a very good job of getting this out to people. Yeah.
So here would be the concern. I believe I treat my life. I try to be as natural health as I can be. I take vitamins. I exercise. I try to treat my body well. I didn't vaccinate my children. My parents didn't vaccinate me. That's how I've just approached the world. But there are times and place for medicine. I think we're in a question now with, you know, if this is a bioweapon floating around, am I better off getting the vaccine, or why would the vaccine experience be different than the natural environment? Am I getting a lower antigen load if I'm out there taking this thing on? As I've said to people, let's go out and catch this cold. What is the difference?
Well, the difference is the massive numbers of what's going on. When you get person-to-person transmission of this, you have a smaller viral load that gives you a greater opportunity to get exposed to it, to respond to it, to develop your T-cell response in 3 to 4 days, and to develop your antibody response in a week to 10 days, which is why most people feel lousy for a few days, and then they get over it. You know, symptomatic individuals are a great thing because they know not to go out and cough and sneeze on people. You know, as Fauci says, and everybody admits, vaccines do not keep you from getting infected, and they do not keep you from passing it on. What vaccines do is prime you so that when you get infected, you save a few days. And so it turns you into an asymptomatic carrier. The problem is that it's making billions of these spike proteins
I'm trying to wrap my head around that. Like I run, I'm out there, I catch the virus, it's floating. We got the spike protein floating on this virus. I'm going to deal with that virus. I'm going to kill it and get out of my body. When people are getting these injections, they are literally injecting billions of these bioweapons into themselves. The same bioweapon that causes blood clotting goes into the brain, can have this prion disease. So they're not just fighting off a few hundred, 10,000, 10,000, 100,000, even a million, their body is trying to deal with billions of spike proteins that have a prion sitting on the top of it.
Absolutely. And it is not only a bad idea to do this for people with comorbidities that don't need billions when they're already dealing with thousands. You know, all they need is to actually be treated for the inflammation and blood clotting, and they'll get better like they normally would. But to give this to middle class, middle-aged people, I would argue is bad. We don't need this. But to give it to our children, for colleges and universities who, by the way, get paid money by the same organizations who help pay for this gain-of-function research, you know, talk about a conflict of interest when our federal government gives money and the Helmsley Foundation gives money and the Gates Foundations give money to our universities, for our universities to require that our healthy college students get vaccinated, or our 12 to 18-year-old kids get vaccinated, or as Fauci says, he wants to take it down to 2 years to get vaccinated for something that they should not be vaccinated for. When you understand this is a gain-of-function spike protein virus, you are injecting a bioweapon into the arms of our children and the people we love. Stop the nonsense. Stop the gain-of-function. Hold these people accountable. Fauci committed perjury, and every one of these people should be held accountable in international court in a Nuremberg trial for crimes against humanity. Because when you make these bioweapons, like you just read the definition, that is a violation of the Biological Weapons Convention Treaty that this country signed and ratified. And either this country is going to be held accountable by the rest of the world, or the people who bypass the safeguards, like Fauci and Collins and the Department of Defense, who gave money to Peter Daszak, who gave it to Ralph Baric and Xi Zhang Li to make this virus, either we're going to be held accountable or the people who actually did this are going to be held accountable. And I don't know how you feel about it, but I don't think the United States should be taken to task for what these people did that circumvented the safeguards and violated humanity.
I agree. I agree. We need to line these people up, and that's why we're making this focus now. Our focus is changing. This news story is different than we thought it was. We know what we're dealing with now, and we know who's doing it, and we know who is against us, so we're going to do that work. I could talk to you all day. We're going to bring you back on. I definitely want to, in the future, for those that can't make it to your event coming up later this month, I do want to talk about treatments, because that does seem to be our way forward. If we have treatments, then we can go out, we can catch this cold, we can let our immune system do it. But if there's ways to help that immune system really knock this thing out, because you obviously don't want these things lingering around, festering inside of your body, we need to clear them. So we're going to talk more about that. I want to thank you so much for your time. It's been incredible. Dr. Richard Fleming, have a great day. Where do we find you? Give me your website one more time so everyone can go and look at your research, because I'm all about the research too.
Right. FlemingMethod.com or Fleming-Method.com. Yeah, as I said, don't take my word for it. Right. There are a ton of papers put on there by people that have researched. Some of it's my research. Much of it are the people's research, because this is a collective effort. And I want to give a shout out to at least one person, Dr. Kevin W. McCarron in Japan, who has been warning people about the consequences of this spike protein crossing the blood-brain barrier. Dr. McCarron is probably one of the world's experts, if not the world's expert, on rhesus macaque monkeys and models and brain diseases like this. And he and a group of people out there that I won't give their names to protect their identity have been providing the type of data that we need to get on top of this. People like the people who help you and give you the data. If it weren't for you and others doing this type of programming, getting the word out there, they would be getting by with this. So thank you for doing this.
All right. I really appreciate you taking the time. Dr. Fleming, Godspeed. We will talk to you soon.
If you liked that clip, then be sure to check out our live broadcast of The High Wire every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Pacific time. You can watch it on Facebook, YouTube, iTunes, and Twitter. We'll see you there.